What the hell are we doing out here, Dave? It's 5:40 in the morning.
And it's over 120 degrees outside.
Yeah, can we hurry whatever this is up?
Just be patient, guys. After all, this is what you wanted.
Dave, how does standing outside in the scorching hot sun factor into your big apology tour for this year's Summer Film Fest?
You wanted to watch The Mummy, a good movie. So here we are, about to watch The Mummy. We just have to wait a minute to be shown the safe.
The safe?
What safe?
Well, after somebody stole the store's only copy of the Spy Who Loved Me laser disc and tried to sell it, Jackie.
Yeah.
I figured I better start storing some of the store's more valuable assets somewhere safe where no one could get to them.
What are you talking about, Dave? These are just the sand dunes on the border of Sector 3. There's nothing out here.
Trust me, guys. Just wait for it.
Wait for what?
We're about to be shown the way.
Well, would you look at that?
I don't believe it.
Yep. A secret storage shed hidden in the desert, with the Mummy 4K disc inside. Now, let me just grab my handy key and... where did I...
Well?
I forgot the key.
Oh, for God's sake.
This is a great start to your apology tour, Dave.
Oh, the hell with it. We'll just watch it on streaming. Come on, guys.
Oh, here we go again.
In the not-too-distant future of the neo-post-apocalypse, a group of movie fans, led by their charismatic but oafish leader Dave, brings the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
On a dig down in Thebes.
Jonathan, I think you found something.
There is an ancient legend of a place known as the City of the Dead.
We call it the doorway to hell.
Where the earliest pharaohs were said to have hidden the wealth of Egypt.
Are we going into battle?
There's something out there. Something underneath that sand.
They came to uncover its secrets.
Mummies, my good son. This is where they made the mummies.
They sought to unlock its treasure.
And then there was light.
Oh, boy.
What they did...
Oh, my God. It does exist.
I think this may be the Book of the Dead.
...was unleash a force unlike any the world has ever known.
You must not read from the book!
You have unleashed the creature that we have feared for more than 3,000 years.
He will regenerate and no longer be the undead.
We are in serious trouble.
On May 7th...
This one!
If the occasion calls for it!
Trust me! It calls for it!
Universal Pictures invites you.
His powers are growing.
Run!
This just keeps getting better and better.
To experience the adventure.
It appears he's already chosen his human sacrifice.
That will live forever.
If he turns me into a mummy, you're the first one I'm coming after.
Go!
You mustn't watch the movie on streaming.
Well, here we are again, guys. But we're watching a good movie this time, unlike the dredge we were watching the past few months in the Summer Film Fest. Again, I'm sorry about that. That's what this next batch of episodes is all about, this apology tour. We're going to be watching nothing but movies that you guys here in the store, Mike, Ryan, Jackie, want to watch after the horrors that I put you through during this last Summer Film Fest. Again, I'm sorry. We're watching The Mummy. This is my way of making it up to you.
And to to women, I should say.
And to, yes, and to women everywhere after the horrors of Madame Web and others.
And et cetera.
Et cetera. I'm your host, Dave. Thanks for joining us for the first episode of my apology tour here. I'm joined again by my fellow employees and treasure hunters, Ryan.
Is that the quote?
It's like I got all the horses.
I was trying to think how that guy's voice is. That rat.
Yeah, he's just kind of like.
I'm also joined by Jackie.
My eyes. It's the guy who gets his eyes stolen by Imhotep.
And finally, the guy whose choice this was. I think you wanted to watch The Mummy, if I recall correctly. Michael.
Relax. I'm the map.
It's all up here. All right, we're watching 1999's The Mummy, and this is probably, I doubt this is going to be the case, but is this anyone's first time watching this?
Well, I think it's my first time watching it all the way through on purpose and not just finding it, you know, 40 minutes like on TV. Yeah. So I've seen parts of this movie many times, but yes, my first full viewing. Mm. And guess what? It's a good movie.
It holds up. This was one of those movies that was on TNT all the time. I remember.
I was trying to think what commercial, what channel it was on. Probably.
I think. I feel like it was TNT. I feel like they had the rights.
That feels
AMC,
accurate.
Maybe? AMC?
Yeah. AMC too. Yeah.
It'll be The Mummy and various sequels, and, you know, you tune in for some Mummy, maybe you're flipping around, you come back, and then you're like, wait, is this... Oh, this is two. Oh, this is Scorpion King. And I don't care about...
Well, what's great about The Mummy, it's PG-13, but it's not overly... I mean, there's some, like, pretty crazy stuff in it, but nothing
too... Scary stuff.
Some scary stuff, but it's not, like, nothing outright super gory, or there's no real language in it.
No, I think it's a great movie for a kid.
Yeah. Well, it feels like a great kid movie in the sense of, like, back in the 80s, how, like, kid movies could be a little more gritty and have a little more intensity to them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you see, like shriveled up, like, you know, husks of people who've literally been drained of their life.
You get the 1999 was a big year for bugs going inside of people.
Oh, yeah.
You get that,
too. Their skin.
Get some of the Matrix stuff in there.
I think the scariest part of this movie is the like, prologue where it's we get Imhotep's whole story, and then, like, and then all of the mummification to live humans. I'm like, That's scary.
Dude, I remember being in a sold-out movie theater in 1999 when this came out. The theater was packed. Anticipation was high because the trailer was cool. The trailer, if I recall, had that big moment in the movie where he controls the sand and makes, like, this wall of sand. It was like, holy shit! You know, and, like, the sand face and everything. That really captured people's imagination. And I can remember, like, the electricity running through the audience during this. This movie goes hard right
it
off the
sure
bat.
It sure does.
I like think I saw it twice in theaters, I think.
It was great, man. Like, I remember every... Like, I feel like you bring this up sometimes, Ryan. I remember every pop that this movie had where the audience just, like, erupted into either a laughter or just, like, awe. You know what I mean? I remember every moment.
It's wild, like, maybe we'll get into it more, but, like, it is... It's right off the bat, like, you're just moving from, like, set piece to set piece in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's things... There's sequences in this... that are just kind of like passed away or happened in passing that feel like they would be the climax of another movie.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's no wasted time either. Every moment leads to something. Every moment builds on something.
What you're talking about, like, pops. I'm just like so, you know, we always 99 is always, like, you know, notorious, like, big year, you know, for movies and stuff. But I think that this may have been like the start of me, like the first movie where I'm seeing a movie every week is this movie. Oh. I think. Because I think I'm looking back at the times. This came out beginning of May, 1999.
So this kicked off the summer movie season.
I was going to say, that's perfect.
The thing is Matrix already came out, but I didn't see The Matrix in theaters. Like, I didn't see it. And so I didn't know about The Matrix till it was out on to rent, basically. It was just like, my anticipation for Phantom Menace was just through the roof that no other thing was coming out. But The Mummy was like the surprise thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so
there's things other than Star Wars that are cool?
Yeah, and so it was like, so I'm looking, The Mummy's May 7th. And then 2 weeks later, we got Phantom Menace, which changed the world, basically. And then like 2 weeks after that, you have Spy Who Shagged Me. I saw that in theaters.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And then you have a week after that, you have Tarzan Big Daddy. Yeah. Like came. Then South Park movie. And then the next week after that, the Wild Wild West. I saw all these movies.
Time to be a
I like that you're saying, it's funny hearing these movies, some of these in like, as if they're like, oh, of course, the seminal film Big Daddy.
Well, at the time, were big deals.
Huge deal, yeah, huge deal. And then 2 weeks after that, I saw Blair Witch Project. And my mom dragged me to see that. God, I remember dragging them to see Muppets from Space. After that, I remember. And then the Eyes Wide Shut's in the middle of this. I didn't see that, but I remember going to see.
I would have loved if like 12-year-old Ryan's going to see Eyes Wide Shut.
But I think
the South Park movie was pretty cool, but Eyes Wide Shut I felt really went places.
Yeah, it's like nonstop. Like if you look all summer, Mystery Men, Sixth Sense comes out this summer.
Oh,
Bowfinger.
Sixth Sense was huge. Yeah. Yeah.
Like this is all. This is the start.
Oh, I didn't realize Sixth Sense was 99.
Yeah.
Wow. Like I think I went to this every week. I remember either getting dropped off because I think I was old enough to get dropped off theater, or would go with my mom.
Your parents were busy going to their own Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah. But I just think like even my mom taking me to see stuff like Blair Witch and Sixth Sense and stuff like that. So. It's like I would have been 12 or turning 13 or something or around that age, 11, 12.
Just ready to see like the cool shit.
Yeah, and so this whole summer was like insane. So every week, and I think this is start. If you look before the weeks before, there's things I saw later, like Matrix, 10 Things I Hate About You. Like there's a bunch of things before that. But I swear to God that this probably was like the first movie I saw that year, and was it, you know?
I just imagine you say about to see the cool shit, and I imagine Ryan putting on his shades like, I'm about to see Phantom Menace, and you get Jar Jar Binks there.
And you take the cool shades off, and you're like, all right.
You're so fine on me now, aren't you, Dad?
Yeah, like before that, there's like a few things. Like there's like Blast from the Past, my favorite Martian. I remember the trailers for all this stuff. October Sky, Office Space, but I didn't go and see these movies in theaters. So this is all leading up, and then this is the start of like
the start of a whole thing. I think, you know? New.
Yeah. So anyway, it was a big deal, and I've seen this movie a lot, and so I have a hard time like thinking of like anything different or positives to say other than like it's rad.
It's cool.
So I was kind of like. I was trying
it was
to think
a
like
crowded
what
year because this ended up being the sixth highest grossing movie of the year.
Wow! We're saying, big old year.
I mean, what can I say that like is maybe it doesn't work about this movie? That's what I was trying to dig for.
I mean, I think the only thing at times, like I think, like you mentioned, like the big year for bugs being under people's skin. Like there were times when like when the first guy dies, like the prison warden, like the bug going up the skin looked a little janky.
Well, not even that. You know what it was? It's like this is a weird MISM movie where I almost think the CGI works better than the costume stuff. Some moments, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Like, there's a moment, just skipping ahead, but like when they're at the end, they're kind of fighting like the mummies coming to life that Unitev's bringing.
The
like, they kind of look goofy, like Power Ranger-y a little bit. But then when they're like jumping around on like the walls and stuff, it looks really scary and cool, I think. Mm. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like funny how like what works and what doesn't.
Well, it probably helps a little bit that the mummies are relatively like, I mean, they're just like in they're just like kind of dark and in like, you know, rags. Like I gotta imagine it's kind of an easy thing relatively speaking to animate.
Yeah, I think that's kind of probably their intention really, but there's a lot of great impressive stuff, but it's just funny like where I'm thinking of like what doesn't quite like still hold up for me with this movie, but nothing ever did. I was such a big thing, and it's kind of funny because like there's so much I remember, but then there's not like a ton of like lines, though? Like, Brendan Fraser line? Like, can you think of stuff that's, like, really, like stuck with you? Like, when
I can think of your opening line. Like, hey, you're on the wrong side of the river.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that
but
was
it's,
a big
like,
one.
Yeah, but it's not, like, funny without being in the context of the movie. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, things that, like, people say and that's stuff. True. So that was, like, things I was thinking about. Like, what's
it's not
the,
like there's
going to
be, like, yeah, baby, from this movie.
There could have been.
Ouch,
baby. Very ouch.
I think it's more just like less lines and more just like the moments from the movie. You know what I mean? Like the sand face like coming at them. I'm a big sucker for biplane action sequences.
Oh, yeah.
Like
Dave, there was a lot of real Dave energy with the guy flying that plane.
Oh, with the
British guy.
Suicidal British guy.
That was if we were to remake this movie, that would be who you would play.
The World War One vet.
Yeah.
Well, that's what's crazy. I did have a thought. Like, again, we're kind of jumping all over the place, but like
the
English pilot at the end, like we only get two scenes of him. Like before that sequence, we get him drunk in like the hotel.
Yeah.
And then we get him later when they're like, hey, we need to borrow your plane, or whatever. We got to fight a mummy. And then he dies. But yet, even with just a couple scenes establishing that character, when he dies, they give him such a send off.
It is. It seems like there's like a scene that like got cut that was like missing or something. Before
like
that.
Maybe he was with them when they were attacking, or when they were at Hamunaptra in the beginning, when all the people are attacking.
No, I like him just as like this, you know, relic of the Great War, who, you know, like many Brits, is just like fucking around in one of the colonies and
walking
and
through.
And he wants to die so badly, and he does.
You have no idea the atrocities I'm responsible for, O'Connell.
I used mustard gas against other human beings.
That role, Rick O'Connell, Brendan, did we decide if it's Fraser or Fraser?
It's Fraser.
Fraser.
Fraser, yes.
Like Razor. I feel like he said that in interviews before. Like, think Razor, Fraser.
Fraser, okay.
Unfortunately for him, the hit TV show Fraser was inescapable.
I'll curse that show to the day I die.
Kelsey Grammer!
They're in like World War One, and he's fighting for the French. Is that what's going on?
The French Legionnaires, something like that.
Is that what's happening, basically, in the beginning of the movie? Because I never thought about it when I was like a kid. I was just like,
which
he's
there.
Which
is an amazing sequence. Like, there is a lot of big CGI sequences in this movie, but I also have to salute like the real sequences. Like, those are just a bunch of people riding on horses.
Yeah.
You see that wide shot of them defending Hamunaptra, and people are
that
like
wide shot in the beginning
the
is like one of the first things that I was saying is like, this feels like this would be like the climax to like a movie
and it's
or
the
something.
Start of the movie.
We've talked about before, but there really is no, no effect quite like, they really got a bunch of people, a bunch of horses just in
one. And I think I think at the end of the day, that's the thing
that's
I like this movie a lot. And I think that's the thing about this movie, like the thing that makes it cool. The reason it's like the big reason is it's just really well choreographed and well shot, spectacular kind of action sequences.
Well-paced.
I would definitely put this up there with The Mask of Zorro, another episode, another movie we watched.
That was 98, right?
Yeah. Maybe even 97.
Something like that.
It was 98. Yeah, it was 98. There's no substitute in just having like a whole bunch of people doing stuff in a shot for an action
scene.
But that
said, this was that time period, man, when CG in movies was an automatic, like, it's appointment viewing. We got to see what crazy shit these computers are going to do next. And just
it was still like really wow. Like
It had wow factor. Like again, like if I remember the trailer, the big moment from the trailer was like the sand forming in the, or the face forming in the sand. And
it looks cool. I
wonder if when you're making this as like a visual effect artist, or like, you're doing the CG, if having that, because back in the 90s there was like this like reverence for it's like, man, this is so cool, this is special. I wonder if that it just impacted how they're going to approach any scene with CG, like, this is a big deal, like we gotta, and because it does hold up shockingly well. I mean, I've seen Marvel movies that look worse than this.
Well, that's because the visual effects artists here were likely paid a good amount instead of being slave labor in Korea.
Nowadays it's just like, hey, should we do this practically? Like, no, man.
No.
Let the CG digital artist do it.
Yeah. Let the CG digital artist do it. Yeah. It's one of those things, like, remember we talked about how, like, Twister, they probably like, oh, wait, we nailed it. What a Twister looks like in visual effects. Let's make a movie about it. And I feel like that's kind of maybe the idea with that damn, you're right, that money shot of the face, face in the, in the,
yeah,
in the, like, it's like, it's really the far away shot. It's like the yeah, wide shot of it with the plane and stuff where you're like, holy moly, like, I've never seen that before in a movie before. And so, mm-hmm, and it looks really cool. And I think,
well, and just the big too, sandstorm in general, like, yeah, it's the yeah, kind of stuff you get later in Fury Road.
Well, it's menacing because you see the face has expressions, you know, yeah, the, like, smiles as he's like, and I particularly love that moment when Brendan Fraser starts shooting at it and you just see like the yeah, clumps in the sand in the face. That was cool.
And he's good. Like, he's like I said, he's like not trying
star,
to do
man,
Indiana Jones, but he makes it his own, and it's interesting. He's kind yeah, of like, what do you think about him? I think you should talk about him in this movie.
Let's talk Fraser.
Well, we do this a lot on the show because we're shallow, but hot or not, definitely hot.
It's crazy how it's the whole joke of on the internet in recent decades too, but of like, this is, you know, did you know you're bisexual? Guess what? Here's Rachel Weisz. Here's Brendan Fraser, and we'll talk about the eyebrows of it all. Justice for bushy browed gals, but God, the like, imagine looking just so looking like that.
Yeah,
and I know
funny
that the yeah, we're also talking about the you know, Brendan Fraser's career afterwards and how it was, you know, like, oh wow, you're not hot anymore, like, oh whoa. And it's just like, he's a human being,
and his movies like literally broken
yeah,
like he got injured.
You can tell he's going hard. He's like yeah, he's like,
going
oh yeah, even just
way,
him just like, you know, folding his gun vest or whatever, the hell, or gun mm-hmm, thing
yeah,
is just like, he's like intense about it, you know.
There's an intensity to this, like, this movie, watching it this time, it almost like reminded me of like watching an anime or like
yeah,
playing like a JRPG video game where like everyone is such a like cartoon character of a person,
but like in the best yeah way. It's almost Looney Tunes at times, like how,
well, look at Benny.
Yeah, but exactly. Benny is
that one is where I'm like, what the hell is going. Like, that guy is just, like, I feel bad for him, almost, how he's just, like, rat
he's
guy.
He's such a rat.
What a surprise! My good friend, you're alive! I was so very, very worried.
Well, if it ain't my little buddy Benny, I think I'll kill you.
Think of my children.
You don't have any children.
Someday I might.
Shut up. Goodbye, Benny.
That character, again, thinking back to my experience watching this in the theater, that guy, every time he was on screen, he was popping. The audience was laughing.
And
they loved
him. He's like a physical version of like what Jafar looks like when he's like the
yes,
like the beggar in Aladdin or something like that.
It's funny too that like you got Benny as like kind of the antagonist rat, but you also have Jonathan as like the protagonist team rat, and he that you need all kinds.
A lot of rats. The,
would you say he's chaotic good?
Yeah, you know,
like,
he
like Brendan Fraser.
Fraser.
Like he,
I can't
is,
imagine if he's listening to this, he's like, oh, just say Fraser.
Well, he's such fine. It's funny because he's such a, yeah, like this like handsome, good looking man, but he's not like this traditional looking guy.
Well,
too.
I think he's very like, this movie's set in the 20s and it's very much like a Errol Flynn kind of vibe.
Sure.
I think he's,
yeah,
I think he looks
like a
20s or 30s
yeah,
movie star more than like
he
a
does,
90s.
But he
movie
has like
star,
this, you know, his he's not like doesn't look like Harrison Ford or Leonardo DiCaprio or something like that. He has this different look to him. It's really interesting. Like, so it's kind of like you're stoked to watch him. And even as like a dude, you were like,
well,
a young kid, you're like, oh, what a guy. You
he know, also brings a slightly goofy
yeah,
energy to it. Like
yeah,
when they're riding up to Hamunaptra on their camels, like he kind of shares this goofy like smirk with Rachel Weisz, like, huh? You know what I mean? It almost looks like a Zach Brannigan look. Like,
he said like in the Chattopedia, he said like one of the things he wanted to do with the character, he thought it wouldn't work as well if his character was taking it super seriously. So he
yeah,
was like,
yeah,
I think the character needs to not take things quite as seriously.
He needs
for this
to be doing some wise cracking and stuff.
You
like
need
that
to know, like the tone of this movie is just, it's so much like a 30s
yes,
or 40s kind
that,
of like adventure Errol Flynn kind of vibe.
you nailed on something, Mike. The tone of this movie, I think, is why this works so well. Like, it has that perfect blend of, like, action, romance, and, like, genuine horror. Like, as we mentioned, to get into it, like, the beginning of this movie, the first 7 minutes of this movie before the mummy appears on the screen is so good.
They were stoked about those letters, by the way.
Yeah, they were.
Oh, so cool. And it, just, were... it goes hard.
This font is gonna go hard!
Well, it's crazy. The movie goes so hard. Again, we mentioned this is the era of CG. Like, every movie with CG in it was a big deal. This movie, right from the get-go, starts with, like, this big sweeping shot of Egypt, and just, like, the camera pans. There's a bunch of people in the background. There's horses, there's guards, there's pyramids, there's sculptures, and this and that and the other thing.
Yes.
And
then it goes monuments into, being built. And...
Yeah, pyramids being built. And then it, and then we get sexy-ass Nanaxinamun, like, walking in. That is a style icon right there.
Oh, my God. Her, yeah, strutting in with the gold body paint.
Isn't she just wearing, like, a totally see-through outfit,
basically,
too?
Yeah. Basically, it's mostly paint. Gold,
yeah. You get everything. You get that Imhotep is this bad dude.
They're having, like, there's this affair and the...
Yeah, and it just you know, he rubs her gold makeup, which I did have the thought watching it this time, like... So does that apply to her every single day?
Of course.
And, like, what happens if she has an accident? Like, oh shit, I smudged this. Like, hey, who touched you?
You gotta go back to your quarters just, and walk get around your handmaids.
In, like, this big old palace, and they barely touch anything, you know, and they only sit in chairs that barely have any back to them, you know. Or anything.
Good point.
And they just walk around and be sexy and, like, and eat grapes sexy. And stuff, you know. That's what they do.
But this whole time we have the narration by, let me get his name here. He's so good in the movie.
Oh, that guy.
Ardeth Bay. He's one of the descendants of the guards or whatever. He's narrating
the
this whole
time.
This is George Harrison in the movie.
We'll just call him George Harrison from here on out. George Harrison's got that
great voice.
It is insane
how much this guy looks like George Harrison.
He's got
really
that great
hot.
Narration, and he's explaining everything, and just, like, this awesome sequence where they just immediately kill the pharaoh. Like, oh, we're fucked. And then he gets mummified, and it is horrifying. Again, I remember the audience when they rip his tongue out and they drop all the scarabs into his...
Well, they don't just do that to him. They everyone involved in
all
the
his,
coup,
yeah,
they mummify alive.
Yeah, so it's like we're mostly on, yeah, him being mummified with the scares, but then in the background it's like, yeah, they're good, they're sticking hot pokers up these guys' noses, yeah. And pulling their
brains
out.
Well, and again,
like,
as we were saying, it like, it's a PG-13 movie, but it walks right up to the line. It cuts right before you were about to see anything. So
there's that, like, that one shot where it's just, like, a bunch of people being, like, tortured and mummified alive. It's like a huge room. It's like, that's like, whoa, this is
and
going
again,
pretty
we're only
hard.
Like 6-7 minutes into the movie.
Yeah, this is like how it starts.
Yeah. And then mummy. And then right after that, we get what, as you described, Mike, what would be the climax to any other movie. They're really following the Indiana Jones formula here. Like,
that
start
first,
big.
I think the first chunk, I think up until they arrive in the city, you know,
Hamunaptra.
I think it's following the beats of Raiders all the way, basically.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like the whole, like, boat thing is the what's her name's Bar.
Well, Raiders doesn't start with, like, ancient
backstory.
Times.
That's, I guess you're right. And I was curious if this movie needs that or not. If it,
I think it does. Well, I think it does because it.
I think
sets,
it's fun.
I think it, because it sets up, because we don't see. I clocked it. We don't see the mummy again until an hour in, halfway through the movie. And I kind of like.
That's
I
true.
Watched Jaws recently, and I kind of liken this movie to Jaws in a way. Like, it's a movie where it feels like it has two fairly distinctive halves. Like in Jaws, you get, like, the first bit where the vacationers or tourists are getting eaten. Second half is completely different, where it's just like, now we're on the hunt for the shark. This one's sort of similar. It's like the first half is like a treasure hunt Indiana Jones movie, and then the second half is like, oh shit, it's like a horror movie, like a mummy is coming and there's plagues. You know, like, the movie feels like it shifts halfway through.
I feel like also the opening, like the prologue and everything, does drive home, like, yeah, this guy would come back to curse everybody. Yeah.
I guess too.
It gives you a glimpse because, like, again, you don't see any of that until the hour mark. You don't see any of that supernatural stuff happen until an hour later. You kind of forget about it a little bit, but then when they're in there and they're digging in Hamunaptra and shit starts coming alive again, you're like, oh shit, the stakes have just been raised.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess that it is curse. Like, something you kind of forget because you kind of see him back. Because it probably would be worse if, like, it was, what's the actor? George Harrison. if he, like, later they meet up with him and then he tells this story, like, to them, like, in, yes, like,
it would,
like,
show,
the second act
slow
or something.
The movie down to a grind.
So you're probably right. Yeah, it is fun. Because that could be, it almost feels like that was probably the intention, because we don't know him yet, you know, or anything like that. And we hear his voice. And so I bet they moved it, because it could be quite the intro, the whole thing with the World War I fight or whatever that is. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, and it's such a good narration, too. He's like, and for 3,000 years, men have fought over the ground, not knowing what evil lay beneath it.
I guess you're right. That is very much like, I mean, this something in the way. This is supposed to be a remake of, like, the Boris Karloff Mummy.
Well, again, it's doing a good job of balancing those two things, the action Indiana Jones stuff and the scary mummy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see The Mummy, the original? Has anybody seen that before?
It was okay. I saw it a long time ago. Yeah, obviously, there's
I watched
no,
it recently.
Like,
I think, yeah, you know, I think... I've watched it like in the last few years, and I think it's one of the weaker of the Universal movies.
I think the most impressive stuff in it is just is Karloff's acting, because he's a very talented physical performer, and that sticks with you in the audience.
I think where the poster is like more of its legacy than anything.
Yeah.
There's a really great poster.
If I remember right, that movie kind of leaned a little bit more into like the tragedy of Imhotep, like, oh, and my lost love type thing.
I couldn't believe it when I watched it, because I've seen this movie 100 times, but when I finally watched like the 1932 Mummy and his name was Imhotep, I'm like, holy shit, it was a remake. I was just like...
Yeah, you did the Leo gif.
I know. I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is the same movie. I couldn't believe it. It has the whole thing with like him getting pieces together to come back to life. And I was just like, I can't believe it. Like, I thought this was this whole, like, nothing the same.
No.
You know, at all.
No. Have any of us seen the the ill-fated 2017 Mummy?
I'm kind of like morbidly curious to watch that sometime.
All I know of it is the like... What if Tom Cruise fell out of a plane? It's like, yeah, we get it, Tom Cruise. You love jumping out of planes.
Well, in that movie, from what I understand, so this movie rips... I feel bad saying rips off, but it is taking from Indiana Jones. That movie, from what I understand, takes heavily from American Werewolf in London. Apparently, he has like a dead friend that comes back to life and starts talking to him.
Okay, sure. Yeah, great.
Yeah, that feels... I mean, what's funny is like... It's nuts to think like that feels like a movie like we need the mummy to be cool and sexy that this movie
and they got the sexy girl mummy, you know.
Like, it, someone probably said that about this movie too, but like it doesn't feel that way now. You know what I mean?
But,
like, it's just so crazy.
Maybe they weren't trying to, but Imhotep is sexy.
Well,
like,
everyone
in this movie is sexy.
Well, and weirdly, like, so he begins. So the whole story is like, so it starts off Imhotep. You know, he has a thing. He has an affair with the pharaoh's wife or whatever, Naxxramun, mistress, whatever. He gets
like, can you remember her full name but not like her title? I don't know. She's like the wife or something.
The golden lady, you know, whatever.
You know, golden gal.
But anyway, he gets cursed, and if he gets brought back to life, he will bring a plague upon mankind and become an invincible monster, basically. Cut to 1923. There's a big army fighting in Harmanoptra. Brendan Fraser's there. He's sexy. He makes you realize why you're bi. And suddenly, like, a face appears in the dust, and you're like, oh, you're in sand. Oh, shit, it's not, or it's, I'm getting all excited here. I'm getting all flustered talking about the movie.
It's just so
someone
hot.
Pick up the synopsis.
So
I'm losing
sexy.
It.
Sexy. Well, he escapes the magi who are protecting like the sarcophagus and everything. They have a line of like, should we like take him out? Like, and George Harrison's like, no, let the desert take him. But because he's just that powerful and sexy and he survives. And 3 years later. We're in Cairo, right? Is where Evelyn and her library are. We meet our gal, except for her eyebrows. She's the most beautiful woman who ever lived.
She gets her eyebrows back in the sequel, if I recall.
They were like, please let her have her eyebrows. she's a librarian, and for some reason, I don't get annoyed by the like, and she's cool. clumsy, but she does destroy that entire library.
Her knocking down all those bookshelves is like also its own kind of amazing set piece.
It is, because it's like they knocked down a bunch of very tall shelves.
They were set up like dominoes. Like
yeah,
it was
she,
like
she stands up. I think she does what are those called? Those Texas switches right there, basically. Is that considered
Texas
switch?
Oh, she like falls
switch?
Down and then the camera rotates and she like moves. And,
well,
and, you know,
I think it's probably like her double falls.
Oh,
and then,
sure,
it,
yeah.
And then it comes back and it's her popping up in the same shot. So that's a Texas switch.
It looks damn good. And yeah,
it
she's...
was real. And also, I gotta ask. So the guy is like, all right, I gotta go, but you clean up this mess. Like, how exactly
how
is she
am I
going
to
clean
do
that up?
I always thought that, even since I was a kid. I was like, oh,
what's she supposed to do? Start stacking books and
you walk out at that point.
I was trying really hard. I just want everyone to know I was trying really hard to make a bisexual joke from Texas Switch, but I couldn't think of anything.
thank you for your honesty. Thank you for your honesty. All Texas.
There's something there. There's something there.
Switch. I don't know. So
listeners,
she,
write into the show if you can come up with a joke for that.
A good bisexual joke. So she's a librarian. I gather that her brother, who's like a wacky drunk layabout who steals things, like he is also trained in like because I think later in the movie he's able to read the hieroglyphs, but he's you know he's not really dedicated like she is, and he's okay hanging around.
He's in it for the money, not the science.
Well, it's but sort of like, he'll hang out in a sarcophagus and scare his sister with human remains.
That was fucked up. I clocked that this time. I'm like, that's an actual mummy
corpse.
That he's like dinking around with.
Yeah,
put that down.
They kind of like throw it's a throwaway that like her parents like probably paid for or like donated or something to the museum. The thing back in the day. So they're probably like kids that have a high education and all this stuff.
Definitely. And also the kind of movie doesn't really touch it, but of like they are Brits living in Egypt. They've, you know, they are colonizers. They're part of it. They were surely highly educated in England. But yeah, their parents were like explorers and academics and like big patrons of this museum, and that's why even though she destroys the place she still have a job there. But then her you know sticky-handed drunk brother has got that key for they don't know it yet but for Imhotep's whole dealio, and there's a map inside the little box that like opens up and is kind of like star shaped. That is a prop alone. I'm like other like Marvel wishes
cool
they had
own.
A MacGuffin like this.
That would be a cool prop to own.
Yeah.
But when you know it, the mean old administrator of the library accidentally burns the map. And we should say this is a re-teaming, a repairing of Brendan Fraser and the Wheeze and the Juice guy from Encino Man.
Thank
what?
God.
What?
The library what? Administrator was the Wheeze and the Juice guy. No Wheeze and the Juice.
Wheeze the Juice. No, Wheeze and the Juice. No, Wheeze and the Juice.
Oh, yeah, behind the counter. There's a couple of those, because there's also two guys that were on the Titanic. The guy with the fez.
Oh, was
of
that?
Course, yeah. The Americans, like, expert that they
Yeah, and
along.
Then also the pilot, the bush pilot dude, was on the Titanic, too.
Oh, yes, time for brandy, Ryan. Yeah, it's time for brandy, and let's talk about Titanic again.
He's just like... I think it's the part just like that's what life needs, a game of luck. That guy.
Even the still talking about all the hotties in this movie, really no reason for the team of Americans also to all be that hot, but they went for
cowboys.
I think it clicked for me in the scene where spoilers, Imhotep has been released. And it's the guy who he steals like the eyes and the tongue from, and then eventually, basically like steals his body. And I was like, that's why they cast a big tall hottie, so that you know when he comes back as Imhotep, we have again we're big and strong and tall and hot, and yeah, well, I'm a mummy, but like,
can I just say, like, speaking of Imhotep for a second, like, so that's the whole thing. Like, the Americans, like, they find the Book of the Dead. Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz, and her brother, like, accidentally resurrect Imhotep, and he comes. He's gonna come about and bring about the prophecy or whatever, mm-hmm. the curse. He's gonna suck up all the people who brought him back. Or,
well, they
the
all have his
jars.
Like what are those called? Those,
they stole the urns that the had like the remains of his dead girlfriend.
And they say that like the method they used to kill him, like.
Never been done before.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
it's
the unfortunate side effect of killing a person like this is they do have the ability to come back and become like the evil overlord of the entire planet.
You could just kill him regular style.
No, we really want to cut out his tongue. Like, if you do that, he might come back as an ultimate form of destruction.
He
will bring about the 10 biblical plagues of Egypt.
He might. They weren't expecting Rachel Weisz to steal that book and read it out loud, and she does.
And then the second half of the movie begins where he's doing crazy mummy shit and, you know, sucking the life force out of guys and just turning
sucking
into
up
sand.
People.
He's leaving husks behind.
But I was going to say, like I honestly think that Arnold Vosloo, you know, Imhotep, like when he starts coming back, like I think he gets scarier when he's closer to human form. Mm-hmm. Like to me, he's scarier in human form than he is in the CG.
Although
I was
shocked at how good it looked in the when they're still in the
I think it looks
in the
better.
Tomb. Yeah. And he's like gross and mummy-y, but it, like just with the eyeballs and like the tongue that he stole from, and that guy looks fucked up too, the way he's walking around with no eyes in the sockets.
That part always got me hard.
That was scary.
Oh, Mr. Burns, thank goodness. I was just starting to get scared. I've lost everyone.
My eyes! My eyes!
I really like how Imhotep looks in that phase when he only has... He has some skin, but it's like really pale white skin. And he's just
and
like...
He
turns
see,
around.
Like,
he's like that guy in the Passion of the Christ, you know?
Yes, he did look like that, yeah.
I think I was talking about like lines and stuff. You're right about moments where there's not really like these like Indiana Jones lines that we all remember, but the thing that it's basically Brendan the sound of Brendan Fraser's like yelling and screaming basically, mm-hmm. and him like. That's really it, and I think like that moment where Imhotep shows up and he shoots him, which is probably the best. That's the most Indiana Jones best moment. But Indiana Jones doesn't scream and yell like that, you know. Like,
yeah.
But him just like he yells at him and he yells back is probably the most iconic moment in the movie. I think and that's like one of those moments that's in montages and stuff. I feel
that
like.
Too was something that got me. I was like, ooh, that's effective of whenever. Imhotep, or I think his priests do it too, of like the opening the mouth to scream, and the jaw goes like extra long. Like somehow it, it seemed like it was, at least for me, it's like this could be really goofy, but it's just freaky. Like it's just that would be a freaky thing.
This is ILM, but if we didn't mention it already.
Oh, you know what? Something else just occurred to me. Another similarity to Raiders of the Lost Ark. We get a lot of silhouette. Stuff in this movie,
mm-hmm.
like people getting stabbed in silhouette, people getting like turned into husks in silhouette. This was a big year for silhouette stuff. Like
I think some of that too is in this movie to like do stuff that would be R-rated but get away with it.
Yeah.
I think they knew there. It was like they had Jurassic Park like we can make a movie like this that kids are gonna love it. You know, like kids that can handle it are gonna love it.
Yeah,
and I was one of them. You know.
You were like, I love dinosaurs, I love Star Wars, and I love the mummy.
I love the mummy.
I also the appreciate mummy. One other thing I appreciate about this movie that I think it holds up. This was back when Ryan's showing us a picture of Brendan Fraser giving his face. But I was going to say, one thing that really holds up about this movie, and I think is something we've lost in modern movies, it's lit well. Like, yeah. You can have scenes in at night or in the dark, but you can see what's happening. I think we take that for granted nowadays.
We really, really do. Every time that they're in the tomb or at, like, the campsite, and you get the, like, the warmth of the fires, the lanterns and stuff like that. The moon. Yeah, I mean, it's a sad state of lighting and gaffers in Hollywood these days. So, again, it's all fucking... You know, previous.
It's gonna be realistic, like, lighting, you know,
CGI skies, because they're like, well, it'll be easier if we just blah 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 blah
and
blah.
Not to say that this movie doesn't have CGI skies, but it's just, you know, I'm just talking like in general, just like things are well lit. I could see what's happening.
We didn't know what we had till it's gone.
Another thing this movie had that was kind of big at the time, the idea of our hero dual wielding pistols, like, that was a big thing at the time.
the whole idea with, like, I didn't realize that was part of, like, Brendan Fraser's character, is he's kind of like a gun guy.
Yeah, he's like a gunfighter.
There's a lot of, like, good gun stuff in this. Like, towards the end of the movie, when you have kind of the finale action sequence or whatever, and George Harrison, he, like, I don't know if you guys clocked this, but, like, they crash land on the biplane, and they're going from the biplane to the tomb, and George Harrison, like, just rips the gun off of the biplane, and, like, for the rest of the...
straps it to his body.
Yeah, for the rest of the movie, he's, like, walking around with this, like, turret gun that he ripped off of the plane, and that's what he's
cool
using.
And he looks cool as shit.
Yeah. He looks like he's having fun with it.
He sure does.
Oh, well, there's the scene before they crash, when Brendan Fraser, when they're flying on the biplane, and he's the only one, him and Winston are the only ones seated.
Jonathan, him and the pilot are in the plane, and then the other two have just been strapped to the wings with, like, belts.
Goggles.
But the Magi guy loves it. George Harrison loves it. He has this big grin on his face, like, this is great.
And then Jonathan
very Mad
is like,
Max
this is so undignified. And George Harrison is just like, amazing.
Well, it's like, I gotta wonder, like, he spent his whole life guarding this patch of desert. Like, he's probably never flown on a plane before.
No,
this is all new to him.
It's a pretty new thing, planes.
Yeah.
And he's just like, wow, how about that?
We fly now.
Crazy shit. Crazy.
Oh, that's what this movie could have used. As like, they fly now?
They fly.
We fly now? We fly now.
We fly now. We fly now, old chap.
He's for some reason, Jonathan, his brother, doesn't like... Usually a character like that's annoying, and for some reason he doesn't do it.
It works here. And the Benny character, too. I feel like ordinarily that would be an annoying character, but again, he pops.
Yeah.
There's a lot of these guys. There's also the dude that's going to hang him. You know, he tags on.
Oh, yeah.
That guy was huge in the late 90s, early 2000s. He was in a lot of stuff at the time. He was in a Bond movie. He was in The World Is Not Enough.
And he's like, I kind of also start to, like, he's someone at first you're like, oh, what an asshole. But then, like, really quickly you're like, oh, he's not that bad, you know. And then
he's fun.
And then he gets fucking the bugs, you know.
He gets super bugged.
He gets bugged bad.
He gets bugged. It's not
I remember
good.
The moment when he gets bugged, like, again, like, the wonders of CGI. Like, when it goes into his face, I remember the audience going, holy shit. But then I remember later, he runs and kills himself by, like, running into the wall. And it was a moment where the audience at first started laughing, and then they realized, oh, he just killed himself.
He's dead.
He's dead.
Ugh.
So I have good news, everybody. I looked this up on the chat internet.
He really died. No.
Those flesh-eating scarabs are not a real species of scarabs.
Oh, that's good.
There is not,
Michael. We said not anything political here. Come on.
It's all a hoax.
The scarabs are woke.
No woke scarabs.
I don't mind that stuff. Again, like, the idea that scarabs can live for, like, thousands of years, like, under the sand.
I don't know if the mummies come back. I mean, for the record,
I didn't think there was any question about if the scarabs as presented in this movie were real. But just the idea of a flesh-eating scarab, is that a real thing? And it is not a real thing.
But you know what it's great for? A movie.
A movie.
Quicksand, you know, remember
quicksand.
That whole thing?
Oh, yeah, quicksand. We get quicksand.
They get quicksanded.
And we do, and we get quicksand. But, speaking of the scarabs and speaking of Benny, that was another part where I'm like, I didn't remember this part of the ending where he gets locked in the tomb in this, you know, room of gold and riches that he's been like pilfering. The lights are going out and the scarabs are there ready to
That was creepy.
Annihilate him. It's so creepy.
Did you just see his little torch start to dwindle?
Mm-hmm. And it's just like, yep, he's about to die painfully.
But I like the moment. I like, again, this is kind of the save the cat moment for Brendan Fraser. Like, the whole movie, Benny has been betraying him left and right, leaving him to die, this and that. But even still, at the end, as the thing is collapsing, like, Benny, like, or Fraser reaches out his hand. He's like, come on, man, come on, I'll still save you. But he doesn't. Or, you know, the thing closes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's just like, all right, bye, man.
Sorry, I tried.
Well,
does he do any suck,
blood's man. Not on my hands.
Does he do a save moment with him in the beginning with the war? Or I can't remember.
Well, it's...
No. At the beginning, Benny, they're like going to door. Hide in the tomb, and Benny does the opposite. Yeah. Benny like shuts the door
Benny
on him.
Benny kills the cat. But,
yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, the, what about, I forgot all about the hanging thing and all that stuff too. Mm-hmm.
Which apparently
reason.
Actually happened accidentally.
They
Yeah, I saw that was the description of that is that Brendan Fraser almost died.
Jesus.
Yes.
Almost actually was hanged from the neck till death.
But it's some great footage. Of a guy getting hung.
I guess they didn't realize he was actually suffocating, right?
Yeah, they thought he was like acting, but it's like no, it's he's being that like it looks great and it looks like a man being hung because it's just a dude being hung.
Jesus yeah. Christ!
And he dangles there for a while in the movie.
I'm glad that he's like finally got like his like his
comeback.
Flowers or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah,
because it like watch thinking of him like throughout the 90s in this and just like putting in like George of the Jungle and all the shit that he was doing and everything like that. Where you're like, this guy was like freaking. I mean, I don't know how much of his own stunts he did, but like at least just physically just walking around, he's like, this is damn Jackie Chan here, and we took him for granted or something, you know.
And the whole just like you know really really gross. Of like, wow, why aren't you hot? And why aren't you like thin and built and hot? And I think he's talked about too of like, it's not fun to only eat like steamed vegetables and rice. Yeah. Like, guess what? I get to
let
eat
the guy
food
live
now.
A little.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Christ. Oh wow, I'm not as fuckable anymore. Boo hoo.
Did anybody see? And sorry, this is getting off subject, but did anybody see the Jungle Cruise movie?
No, but with Mr. The Rock and Emily.
Yeah, Emily Blunt.
Was that going for
Mummy
vibe?
Do you think they were going for a Mummy vibe? Because like he's not Brendan Fraser.
No,
and, The Rock.
No, God no.
But they like the costuming's the same. I feel like Emily Blunt is as kind of like a Rachel.
Well, it's tough to say like the Mummy vibe because the Mummy vibe is so much like. It's an action adventure, you know,
park, right?
Hollywood kind of thing already to begin with.
I think the, I mean, as with a lot of Disney, and especially as with a lot of The Rock's performances, it's well, they're intentionally being like so sexless and so devoid of like, you know, any kind of.
That has like
sexual
a,
or otherwise.
You wouldn't have the opening with the like see through outfit.
Well, and they don't. I don't. Think that there's a romance in that, but if it's a romance between Emily Blunt and The Rock, it's so just like
as that Jack Whitehall is like the British like stuck up brother in that,
and it's just like I don't believe in a chemistry between these two performers, these two you know shiny doll performers, but I do believe that Rachel Weisz and Brendan Fraser are making some glad eyes at each
can
other.
Can I throw out a would you rather real quick?
Yes.
Would you rather see Jungle Cruise or 2017's The Mummy?
2017's
The
Mummy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know if it's like a better movie necessarily, but I'd have more interest watching it.
Oh, what
Jungle
happens
Cruise.
In the Jungle Cruise? They go on a cruise in the
like.
Jungle.
I just have no interest in Jungle Cruise. At least The Mummy is like. I'd be curious to see what the shared universe or whatever was pinned on.
This failed like, start to a shared the universe.
Failed yeah. dark universe.
I watched it. I didn't remember watching it.
Which one?
The Jungle Cruise movie.
Oh wow.
Yeah. What did you think? Give us your review. Mini review right now.
I said Emily Blunt carries this movie on her shoulders and rocks are heavy. That's what I said.
Oh, they sure are.
I know, that was 2021. So
that's
when I watched it.
2021.
That feels.
I think I was probably just trying to like pad out my end of year around that time. It was November 2021. I was probably like, oh, let me just squeeze this in. Maybe I'll hit like an even 50 of movies I watched that year or something. You know.
Well, it's funny. It's funny to think about what this movie could have been, because looking in the history, the development of the Mummy, this had been in development for like almost 20 years, I think, this came out. There were names attached, like George Romero was attached for a while, Clive Barker, Joe Dante.
I saw the Clive Barker one was. It's funny because he's the guy who did Hellraiser, right?
Yeah.
And I've never seen Hellraiser, but I'm aware of it, and it's good. I saw that the note was the Clive Barker version was ultimately that reason that one was rejected was the studio thought it was, quote, too perverted.
And he said, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Well, and when you look at the history, like, it seems like they were really going for like a low budget horror movie vibe for a lot of these earlier iterations. They wanted it to be like a low budget thing.
Yeah. Is it interestingly, like one of the original, treatments, the reason it was rejected was basically because it was a period piece, which is what it ultimately ended up being. But at the time, they were like, it's too expensive. We can't do a period
piece.
No,
it's got to be 80s.
Joe Dante was once attached. He had an idea with Daniel Day-Lewis as the Mummy, which is interesting. I mean, I don't know if any of these ideas, all of these kind of sound to me a little half-assed. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the Mummy is, at the end of the day, kind of a tough thing to adapt, because I do think the idea of it is like cooler than the actual, like, what it is. And I'm talking purely Universal's The Mummy movie. Like, if you're trying to adapt that movie into something, like we talked about before, it's not really like the best Universal horror movie. Like, there's cool stuff about it, but
it's that poster, really. It's doing the heavy lifting.
Yeah, it's kind of almost like a blank slate of something to adapt.
Definitely, yeah. But and I again, just like the kind of most iconic stuff about the, you know, is the Boris Karloff of it all. Of isn't it like the twitch of like his fingers that like when the, you know, and him sneaking up on the people who disturbed his tomb, of like where, you know, that's where the tension is, that's where like the physicality is so interesting and important. But then half the movie he is just like dressed as like a normal dude because he's you know, trying to get back his lady love and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's where the movie kind of loses me, if I recall.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, this is just like, Boris Karloff wearing clothes.
I'm trying to find, like, is that really the start of like that look of a mummy, is like the Boris Karloff movie? And I'm trying to find out like the mummies in pop culture of like using as like the undead and or like romantic type.
Well, I think there was like a big Egyptian craze in the like 20s with finding Tutankhamun's tomb, which is probably why the mummy was made in the first place.
There's the Egyptology stuff kind of started during Victorian times, and you know, like the colonization, the Westerners, English people, desecrating all kinds of tombs. There is a big market for ground up mummied as like a supplement, basically. Just some real like, you know, racist, gross, etc. And so it's like that. This movie, again, we're still set in 1920s, like, British-occupied Cairo, and it's not great, but it is a really cool, you know, setting to be in. I feel like the movie makes a point, too, of the Americans' team in the tomb. They have a lot of, like, Egyptian laborers with them, we see very clearly it's
cannon
like...
cannon fodder.
Yeah, these guys are cannon fodder. They are the Americans are not risking their own tails to get burned by acid. But the movie does still, like, you know, it's the group of laborers like trying to run away, and it's like, nope, man, they're all dead.
Well, the movie also needs some non-main characters, to get killed by scarabs or get killed by guards, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
this is interesting. It's it says that. It's basically the first origin of like in like a popular culture was like, it looks like the end of the 19th century, And it was like, and you're right, it's basically when Egypt was colonized by French and Victorian British writing about this stuff. And I guess they were always mostly female, and there is a sexual romantic kind of like thing.
Yeah.
And then it looks like the earliest example, Undead Mummies, is The Mummy, is what it's called, or A Tale of the 22nd Century, whatever. And I guess it's from 1827, and it's an early science fiction of an Egyptian mummy who was brought back to life in the 22nd century. Just kind of
that's pretty cool.
Pretty cool, I must say. Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
It's a cool concept.
And I love that these titles, like the Frankenstein and this, have these like long like extra titles to it and everything. And so it was not relatively, and the 30s was the, you know, the monster mummy, and the romantic mummy was in the 30s. That was the start of this thing.
The birth of the monster mash.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were in the lab. So
well, any closing thoughts on The Mummy?
Well, we've said it, but great time to be bisexual. watching The Mummy.
Yeah. It's a whole lot of fun. I think it's a perfect movie for like a kid, I think, like to get that can handle these things like early. I think you could be, it's like a perfect 10-year-old movie, I feel like, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think it's like, for now, I don't know if I would like give this like have an adult watch this and be like, this is going to be amazing, but like I think it's
just
fun.
So fun.
It is fun, everything. Yeah.
It's a thrill park. It's a thrill ride. A theme park ride. It's fun.
Yeah, watching it now, I don't think it quite hits the like the levels of like a Raiders of the Lost Ark kind of thing. But like it does have, for this time, it's really impressive stuff and everything. So
that's a recommend from you?
Oh yeah, totally. Especially for these actors and in that moment. I think the moment that's my background right now,
both of them facing the mummy.
If I was putting together, you know, the life of the movies, I would have that. And like that should be in the Babylon, I think, that moment.
In the montage.
In the montage.
Of
yeah.
The movie Babylon. Well, what about you, Jackie? Would you recommend 1999's The Mummy?
Absolutely, I would. It's, the easy to throw around the popcorn movie as, like, derogatory, but
this is the most popcorn movie.
This is a perfect popcorn movie. I would love a big tub of popcorn to munch on while watching this fun movie. Like, that's what it's all about.
What about you, Mike? Are you grabbing for a box of corn?
I am, thank God, finally. Yes, this movie was good. And I am glad I demanded that we watch it, because it was a breath of fresh air to watch a nice movie.
A breath of old mummified air.
Yeah, I love that stale tomb air.
Yes.
Well, I too would recommend it, and I think the only thing holding it back, I think you kind of summed it up, Ryan, the only thing kind of holding it back from reaching the heights of something like a Raiders in the Lost Ark, it is kind of lacking in those memorable lines.
Well,
like,
maybe that, and I think the first half is very Indiana Jones, I think, really.
But remember the part of the movie where they're like unsealing one of the tombs, and it's kind of like the Americans that were following, like the side characters, and they're like getting nervous and asking like their workers to unseal the tomb, and they do, and then it's booby trapped, and they're just like hit with salt acid, and that's how I feel watching the other Summer Film Fest we watched. I feel like Dave is backing away, asking me to like open.
You loved Supergirl, Mike.
I turned open to Madame Web, and oh god,
my eyes,
I'll never see again.
Sieda.
Oh yeah, that I never. The guy with glasses, like that was a tough part. That's the last thing. The guy that always got me real hardcore. The guy with like, look at her, look at my eyes.
Did you relate to that? Were you like, that would happen to me?
Yeah,
like,
I'd be that guy if it was.
Yeah,
he seemed like a nice one in that crew too. So
he wore glasses. So yeah, that's how you know he's nice.
Yeah, he was
eyes.
Well, unfortunately, again, I couldn't find my key. We could have watched this in 4K, but we had to watch the streaming. And nevertheless, it still looked good, sounded great. Again, this is a great movie to pump your sound system to. Definitely check it out. It still holds up. We recommend it.
I think you should watch on VHS, actually. I think it's the way to watch it.
On a TV VCR combo. It's probably the most ideal way to watch The Mummy.
Yeah, it'll make that's those like, parts so. I was talking about in the beginning where I was saying like the weird the Power Ranger costumes don't hold up as well as the CGI. It would fix that, you know, that yeah. issue.
Yeah. Well, the next episode in my apology tour to everyone here in the store is going to be a television episode, you guys. Uh-oh. We're going to be watching MASH on the show. Can you believe it?
Not even the movie?
No.
We're going to be starting. Dave, we're going to be starting with the beginning, right? So like episode one of MASH.
We're going to be watching all like 11 some odd seasons of MASH on the show. No. We will be watching season 6, Comrades in Arms, part 1 and 2. This is a Jana request.
I mean, this does feel like in old-timey video stores, you know, you'd have like you'd go to a section and there would be like a VHS tape of like two random episodes of MASH or something. Yeah. So I guess it's kind of in line with that.
And that's beautiful.
Anyway, that'll do it for us on this episode, guys. It does feel good to watch a good movie again. It feels like it's been too long.
Yeah, it does. Let's go. We should do it more.
I think we should get
the movie.
Let's do another Madam Web episode.
Let's jump on our camels and ride off in the sunset, shall we? Will you join me?
I'm spitting like this camel.
I'm gonna go back and try and get some more loot.
Say hi to Benny.
Juice!
Not Mach yet!
No, Wheezing the juice!